Hello and welcome to the Tour de France podcast at humansinvent.com. My name is Richard Moore. Tonight I am joined by Lionel Burney.
Good evening, Richard.
By Daniel Freem.
Good evening.
And by very popular request from our sponsor, from Sharp, Tanman.
Bonsoir.
That was some interesting music there that I think you caught on your recorder earlier, Daniel.
Yeah, it was. I was looking for the finish and I found a fantastic, about 20-piece band. It's quite sensational.
Can you describe them a bit more?
No, Lionel is our man for descriptions, Richard. Yeah. Even though Lionel wasn't there, he'll be able to set the scene.
You're not very good at descriptions, are you, Daniel? Come on. You can tell.
It was a band. They seemed to be wearing some kind of folkloric dress, if that's a word in English. They were wearing white kind of overalls, actually. I thought they kind of looked like Basques, but they wouldn't have been Basques here, and it certainly wasn't Basque music. But it was very good.
That was a good description.
Thanks.
Well done.
Thanks.
Oh, I can picture the scene.
For a guy who writes so lyrically, I didn't think it was that great.
I've just conjured up an image of folk, Morris men, Morris dancers.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was, Lionel, yeah.
Inmates at Guantanamo Bay, but in white overall, traveling orange. That's my image, I don't know. Anyway, there's a plane going overhead. So, Lionel, tell us where we are tonight.
Well, we're standing in a marquee outside the exposition centre in Tours, overlooking a car park. The budget must be getting spent because we haven't even got chairs this evening. We're having to stand around in a little huddle. But things are looking up because our hotel tonight is the marvellous-looking Hotel Les Fontaines.
Your hotel? I don't think mine is. I think mine might be the marvellous, the rather unmarvellous-looking premier class.
What about you?
Well, speaking about the premier class, this creaking and squeaking, it sounds a bit like an old mattress in a premier class hotel, which has been
maybe when you stay there, town man. I don't know what you get up to, but
anyway,
moving on,
chaps. I knew that having town man might be a mistake. Let's talk about today's stage, finishing tour, won by Marcel Kittel. A new era is upon us, perhaps. This was, I think, the first sort of real straight head-to-head between Kittel and Cavendish. The first stage that Kittel won, Cavendish was held up by a big crash in the closing stages. The stage that he won a couple of days ago, Cavendish hit his teammate on the way to the line, and that certainly disrupted him a little bit. And so this one was a really straight fight, and Kittel emerged the winner. Now, coincidentally, Lionel, you spoke at the start to Matt White of Orica Green Edge on the subject of sprinting. Can you tell us a little bit about what he said, and we'll hear from him?
Well, yeah, we will hear from him. But basically, I just noticed this morning that a lot of the riders from Argos, Shimano, Orica, Amiga Pharma and Lotto Bellisol, the trend of wearing skin suits for these flat stages has really taken off now, and everyone's doing it. So that was the starting point for my conversation with Matt White.
Yeah, that all the washing hasn't been done for the last couple of days. Look, it's a very fast day today. It's crosswind, cross-tailwind, and it's a pretty typical Tour de France flat stage.
Yeah, a lot of talk now about power outputs, wattages, and all of these, Sky coined the phrase, I guess, marginal gains, but it's becoming ever more important, isn't it, to just find those little savings wherever you can.
Definitely. And look, gone are the days where you just have a sprinter and wish them all the best in those final kilometres. And I said from the start, I think we've really seen this year's Tour de France the biggest depth in our sprint in a sprint group we've ever seen. There's two or three teams here who are solely committed to their sprint leader, and we have got a very good batch at the moment of 8 to 10 world-class sprinters all competing at the same time. Whereas it does go in ebb and flow, which we've had Cipollini era, and then obviously Mark for the last couple of years, and Greipel, but they're all coming into their own, and with the inclusion of with Kittel and the young French sprinters and Dekenkob and Goss and all those guys, we have got a big group of sprinters at the moment.
When you look at all of the sprint stages as they unfold, they tell us a little bit more about each team's tactic. For example, Lotto Bellisol seemed to come to the front at a very similar point each day. Omega Pharma similarly. So what is Orica Green Edge's strategy, perhaps without giving too much away to the opposition?
Yeah, well, we haven't got the numbers that that those guys have got. We came here with a lot more diverse team, so we were a bit more open to some of the medium mountain stages. And we've got three guys designated the Matt Goss, Svein Tuff, Brett Lancaster and Darryl Impey. And each team, you've either got it. There's two tactics you can take for the sprint. You either take control from a certain point, and then you've got to get the timing 100% right. If you leave your sprinter out there too early, then it's probably the worst thing you can actually do. But if you get it right, then you're in pole position. The other one is to come from behind and make a big surge over the top of a sprint group in that last 2 kilometres, or just to feed off a sprint train, because we know that Argos will have a train, Lotte will have a train, and Amiga will have a train. So they're the three options, basically, that any sprinter can take or other teams can take.
And on Matt Goss, who is your designated number one sprinter, how is he doing? Is he coming better as the tour goes on?
He is. He is going better, and look, it's definitely going in the right direction. So, look, we're going to support him as much as we can. For our other guys, they haven't got too much to do until Saturday or Sunday anyway. So it'll be a nervous, fast day, but the plan is to support Matt Goss's final as much as possible.
And lastly, a couple of days ago with the crash and then the kind of fallout and the blame, everyone wants to try to blame who was at fault, but it seems to me that one of the issues is that you have sprinters going forward and lead-out guys kind of coming backwards. So what can be done to kind of try and clean up the sprints? Because every millisecond counts, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, but it's really hard because the Tour de France is certainly limited on where they can finish the stages. So, like, the other day it was a pretty narrow final, but, you know, there's nothing you can do when you've got 200 guys steaming towards the line at warp speed, and that's just how cycling is. And, look, the guys do take their life in their own hands every day they line up for those sprints, but at the end of the day, those guys are very, very skillful athletes, and accidents do happen.
You're listening to the Tour de France podcast with humansinvent.com and Sharp.
So that was Matt White, Whitey. Tanman, you're an Australian. Where were Orica Greenedge today at the finish? Didn't spot them. They were quite active on the front, quite far out, weren't they?
And then Svein Tuft went round the roundabout and his wheels slipped from under him.
Yeah, I am Australian, but when the Australians don't win, I generally defer to being from Chinese origin.
How did the Chinese guys get
into it? I'm not much of a Green Edge. Well, I'm not at all a Green Edge apologist. I'm a bit like Freeboss in a way. I just want whatever stage it is. I just want the best man to win. And
well,
I don't.
Yeah, that's like Freeboss as long as it's a young Frenchman.
Oh, he likes a bit of that, does he?
Yeah, but anyway, carry on. Sorry to interrupt.
Well, I just think that I won't say Greenedge are making excuses. I mean, they're all valid points, but there has to be a reason why the sprints are not working. At least last year, Goss had 3 seconds and a third place. This year, he hasn't really been in the running. We know that there's four top sprinters here at the Tour de France. They've all won stages, and Goss really has been the man from nowhere who's stayed there. So is it to do with, often people were criticising the sprint train in their maiden year, but I don't think we can say that. If you've had 18 months to get a sprint train together, I think you have to say, well they would have dialed it in by now. And Lancaster or Impey are great lead-out men, so I think Goss, for whatever reason, he's not performing.
Doesn't have it.
Yeah, Rich, I spoke to Goss on the rest day, and he's a bit mystified himself as to where his form is. He says, you know, he's trained better than last year. He should be in better condition, but it's just not there. And, you know, he admitted that the pressure has got to him a bit over the last 18 months. It's the first time he's really been the sole leader or, the top man at a major team. And I think he's in a slight quandary, isn't he, about, you know, does he become sort of Sagan light? Mm. Does he become someone who targets the harder sprints? That's what he sort of says that he thinks his future is in the more difficult sprints. But, you know, as you've pointed out earlier in this Tour, Tanman, he's perhaps not as versatile at the moment as people have often said he is. I mean, he's not climbing as well as Cavendish in this
Sagan-like
tour.
Or Sagan light? I mean, this is a rider who was a very nearly world champion just in 2011, and he was the rider who, when Cavendish moved, when they were split up at the end of the HTC Columbia project, he was the rider that Cavendish said he feared the most.
Yeah, I mean, that's surprising. I agree with Freeboss. I don't think he's a pure sprinter, and I don't think he's that versatile. He's no more versatile than Sagan, so how do you beat Sagan in a medium mountain or stage or a very difficult sprint stage? I don't think Goss has the goods to do so. I'd like to be proven wrong, but just cast your minds back to the Giro and after the fifth stage when John Degenkolb said every month a sprinter does not win, it just raises the stress level. So I just that stuck in my mind because I'm just thinking how stressed would Matt Goss be feeling right now, because the last stage he won was at Tirreno, and then the prior to that it was at the Giro d'Italia in 2012.
But enough about Matt Goss.
Very quick thing, Tamman. Is Goss someone who really relies on being on absolutely top form? Because, you know, you get some riders who can perform in pretty much any circumstances and you almost don't notice their form. I mean, I remember Cavendish talking about a team time trial in the Vuelta in 2010, where Goss was on such sort of electric form, he could have dropped the team, he could have ridden off on his own. But you know, we've certainly seen none of that over the past 18 months, really.
Firing. He doesn't. I mean, you even said this guy, when Bob Stapleton took him on, was a rider with warts, I think.
Yeah.
Not literally. He might, but I haven't seen him naked. So I'll just imagine that it was metaphorically.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't think he's got... Yeah, he can win without being at 100%. I think a lot of the top sprinters can. I think Cavendish is a guy who can sprint, not being in top form. It's their will to win. And I think Goss, he's lost a bit of that simply by virtue of the fact that he hasn't won a sprint stage for now 4 months.
He's a guy who he can look from time to time like he's got a bit of puppy fat. I don't know if weight is an issue for him as well.
I can't go into too much detail, but he has a...
Then again, he's not the only sprinter.
And then people have made light of Orica Greenwich being a boys' club, or, you know, they go out and hit the piss or whatever, but...
Barbies.
I think they have a good time.
Throw the piss, do they?
We were talking a lot about pissing the last 24 hours with Cav having urine thrown at him, but I think... Yeah, the main thing is that...
Maybe that's their next video.
And they're more throwing... They're jumping into
Save
the good stuff for your
Lionel, pod. Lionel's still here.
Right, let's talk about
Lionel's still here.
Let's not forget, you know, the guy who won the stage, Marcel Kittel. You know, he's the man to talk about. And I think the thing that struck me most today was that sprinting is the one discipline in road cycling where you can see two such different physical specimens going head to head. You couldn't have a guy Kittel's size and a guy Cav's size really equals in any other terrain except in the sprints. And I think that's a really fascinating battle we've got going on there, because for the first time, Cavendish has got a serious kind of
rival
and a disadvantage. And he's got to now... I know that him and Stegemans are not quite hitting the marks absolutely spot on. Stegemans kind of took him up to speed perhaps a little bit too early and left him with a little bit too much to do. And Kittel's size and power is just, you know, it's unrivaled at the moment, isn't it?
Cavendish, to be fair to him tonight, he's somebody who lets his frustration be known if he's frustrated and his anger bubbles up. We've seen that a couple of times at the tour. He was very, very gracious after the finish today.
Well, he's been on his best behaviour all day today, hasn't he?
he's doing very well.
Whether he's had a little pep talk from somebody, but it's not often that we hear him say that he was beaten by a better man, because often it's not a case that he's beaten by a better man, it's a case that perhaps circumstances have gone against him, whereas today there was absolutely no doubt, because Kittel came from so far back.
He was very, very generous towards his team as well, and said that they'd done an excellent job, and they certainly looked better, but they were swamped at one point, I think, by Argos. Shimano came steaming up the outside right at the end, and I think Tony Martin was at the front at the time, and he got kind of boxed out a little bit, and at that point Cavendish did seem to lose Stegemans' wheel for a little bit. He then had to find it again, And that effort may have cost him. He didn't use that as an excuse. I actually spoke to Patrick Lefebvre just after the stage and asked him about that. And
the leader trained there today, Mark, to be beaten fair and square.
No, I think today the leader was 99% okay. Just a while, Iago's guy closed to Tony, but Matteo and Gert went out right moment.
Mark seemed to lose Gert's wheel for a little bit and had to maybe make an effort to get back to him.
I don't know. I think Gert started at the right moment. Maybe he could have waited another 10-20 meters, but Ross back went. I think he's beaten by Marcel Kittel, who's for the moment, this is the fastest.
Do you think the difference is the teams, or do you think that Kittel is at the moment going a bit quicker?
The team is not going quicker. Our team was very good today. Only Mark is beaten on the line with 15 centimetres. I don't think you can blame the team.
It's not often that we've seen Mark being beaten fair and square in a sprint. How do you think he'll respond to this?
I hope with the pedals, because tomorrow is another chance. Maybe Lyon as well, and then Paris. So three other chances. I think he, Greipel, Sagan are more or less on the same level. But for the moment, Kittel is a little bit above them.
This is the humansinvent.com Tour de France podcast, powered by Sharp.
I was Patrick Lefebvre, the team manager of Omega Pharma Quickstep, Mark Cavendish's team. Cavendish, Daniel.
Yes.
What did you make of today?
I think it was an improvement as far as the team is concerned. Their issue, I think, so far in this tour, and something they're talking about a lot amongst themselves, is that they're looking at Cavendish's power files and they're seeing that there are big spikes in the last 4 kilometres. And he talks about this kind of sweet spot of about 450-500 watts, where ideally he'd be on that the whole time until, you know, really when he's led out with 200-250 to go, and then, you know, he kicks and he's up over 1,000 watts. But what they're seeing is that he's having to go close to 1,000 watts several times in the last 4 kilometres. I think part of that is the understanding with Stegemans at the moment is a little bit troublesome, because Stegemans is so fast, and when Stegemans decides to go and he decides to move up positions, it's almost too quick, and Cavendish having to do huge efforts to just stay in his
surfing,
wheel.
Surfing, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he talks about surfing on the wheels,
and
that doesn't sound like surfing, but more like lots of mini accelerations.
Yeah, exactly. And
surging.
Surging.
Yeah.
And nice. We talked about form, and Cav's form is not brilliant. He's still suffering slightly, having come off the antibiotics in the first week of the tour, and also he's got a slight problem on one buttock, I think.
Really?
Left buttock.
Oh, this is exclusive information.
How do you know about that?
He told me yesterday.
Oh, I thought it was maybe when you got together with those young Frenchmen.
What?
Oh my goodness.
I want to talk about. I think you're sort of being sort of almost Cav apologist in the way. I think he got a good lead out. I mean,
I thought he got a good because
the way he was so composed after the stage, you have to, if he was going to blame anyone, he would have been so angry. And I think if it was last year, he would have won that stage.
Yeah.
Kittel wasn't a factor.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask actually Kittel where he's found his explosivity from, because compared to just 12 months ago, he was so much, talking about surges, for such a big guy, I know he's got better and more explosive, but has Cav lost a little bit of his, so much of that talk in his autobiography was about his double kick, has he lost a bit of that?
I think that there was a feeling at the Giro that people were getting closer. A few people said that at the Giro. But then sporadically, I think the stage he won here in Marseille, he showed again that he was quite clearly superior. So I think intermittently he's still as superior as he was. But I think the team is an issue at the moment. And what they're seeing when they look at the power files, they're seeing something similar to what they saw with Greipel in the early days at T-Mobile and HTC, where he was making mistakes and losing wheels, etc., and having to do these big surges to get into position, and then wasn't fresh for the thing. I mean, Cav always says that a sprint is not about who's the fastest, it's about who's the freshest in a way. It's about who's the fastest when everyone is on their knees. And he's, I think he's more on his knees than he has been in the past coming into the last 500
meters. You have to
meters.
Say, though, Freebos, that sprint in Saint-Malo was so impressive. It really did show Kittel's finishing speed because he nailed Greipel. Like, Greipel, that's when I realised that even though so much of that talk was built between Cav and Greipel when they left HTC, I realised that Greipel was... He's never had that kick, and now he's come into... now he's come across someone who does have
the Tiger Sprung, as they call it in German.
Oh, really?
Tiger
Leap. Nice. Greipel's always been...
I like that. I'm going to use that.
Greipel's always been limited, I think, as a sprinter. He had a perfect lead out into Saint-Malo, and Kittel's just looks like the real deal. He looks a bit better, doesn't he? And he's only 25. He's coming into his peak. And it must... You know Mark very well, Daniel. I mean, he's 28. How will he respond to having a genuine rival for the first time in his career?
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, we've always wondered whether that was the, you know, Tamman, you talked about a double kick. Well, that could be the double kick in his career. That could be the spur that then, you know, kind of throws him forward to aim at even loftier goals than he has been in the past.
I reckon this is great for Cav,
well, exactly,
because I think he needed some. I think perhaps he was getting a bit too complacent. I mean, those victories were coming very easily to almost, like we were talking about sprinters not being able to win, not in 100% form. Cav was one of those guys, and perhaps this is what the fillip he needs. And imagine if, you know, Kittel had a lead-out man like Henderson. I still believe he's the at the moment the best lead-out man in the world. So I'm not disparaging Corne de Cort or anything like that, or Vailers, but if Kittel had someone like that, then Cav needs to start getting a bit worried.
Daniel mentioned the Germans there, and that's three German stage wins in a row, isn't it? Five in all, is that now?
Yeah.
Kittel three, Tony Martin, André Greipel, and yet the Germans are still not getting to see the TV coverage back in Germany. And Kittel was asked about that in the press conference, wasn't he? And there's a sense that, you know, is Germany going to fall back in love with the Tour? And I wonder whether it would take
Kittel could be the
man. Yeah, Kittel. Sort of.
If you can't love Kittel, who can you love,
exactly,
Daniel?
Well, Gerard Holtz is
the
much,
French TV
is,
presenter.
Yeah, he's much more enamoured than I seemed to be the other day with Kittel.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you witness that today?
Oh yeah, yeah. You see, he kind of giggled girlishly and
how
said,
did that manifest
and said, "Oh,
himself?
He has a crazy charm, this boy."
he is. What is he, Daniel? 7 foot of German,
condensed muscle, chiseled jawed. Yeah. Anyway, there's been a lot of that. Christian Prudhomme the other day mentioned Chris Froome's charming eyes, sweet eyes, and.
I think Kittel, I just noticed today, I mean, I'm straight, but I think he manicures his eyebrows.
Yeah, it's a good question, actually. Is the Tour becoming too metrosexual? It is becoming
extremely
metrosexual.
I think the
it's
most
always
metrosexual
been,
out of all of us.
I think it's
I wear shorts out of a seconds bin at a sports store.
I noticed that.
My whole outfit costs about $5.
Really? You were done.
Yeah.
I think it's always been metrosexual. I think there's always been that component to cycling.
Yeah.
Is that because of the shaved legs?
Who's the least metrosexual man in the peloton?
In the peloton?
Lawrence Tendam.
Lawrence Tendam.
Werewolf.
Yeah. it's a very good question. I mean, we missed this year Linus Gerdeman and Thomas Lofqvist and people like that who always boy band
the
members.
The ultimate boy band, I think, would be Kittel, Lofqvist, Gerdeman.
Mario Cipollini on drums.
Yeah.
didn't Cav talk about in his book about almost on the verge of having OCD? I mean, he's a very neat person. I remember seeing him at the Tour Down Under, I think, when he came a couple of years ago, and his shoes were all red, they were new, but he was polishing them before the stage, and he said it helps him relax. Polish his new shoes. I mean,
that's his relaxation technique.
Oh, okay, maybe I should
try chuck him a couple of pairs of mine. still here in tour with Daniel Freeb, who's texting Lionel Burney, who's paying attention.
Well, he's not texting Lionel Burney because Lionel is to the right of him.
He might be.
He's probably texting
and Tanman. Tanman is still here, limbering up. He was doing some stretching exercises in that little break there.
I mean, sitting on those hard plastic chairs for day in, day out, I mean...
Yeah, you got to keep yourself in shape,
haven't
you?
I'm all skin and bones.
You don't want a sore left buttock. Anyway... not a great deal happened today in terms of the overall classification. Chris Froome was just in front of the major pile-up that took out his teammate, Edvald Boasenhagen, from Team Sky. Boasenhagen apparently has a fractured shoulder, we hear tonight, but intends to continue in the race. He's also got a fractured bone broken in his arm as well,
in his elbow.
But he apparently, I saw him being loaded into an ambulance and he was smiling and laughing and saying, see you tomorrow. He always seems to be in a good mood, Boasenhagen. So he at the moment, the plan is for him to continue, but should that prove impossible, and I remember Pascal Simon continuing with a broken shoulder bone in 1983 for several days, but should that prove impossible, he would be a major loss to Chris Froome.
Everyone's trying to outdo each other, aren't they, with this, you know, this kind of...
Knowledge.
What? No. Oh, with this broken bone, someone's going to turn up.
Do you think it was deliberate?
What? Someone's going to turn up one day in a wheelchair. And
I thought your expression, free boss, was one of perhaps believability with Boasenhagen.
No, not that time, man.
Because, you know, a lot has been made about Geraint Thomas having his fractured pelvis, and I was thinking, well... You know, 99 of 100 people couldn't get back on a bike. So how bad is the fracture? I'm not questioning that he has a fractured pelvis, but when you have a fractured shoulder, collarbone, whatever, you know, how bad is it?
There are fractured shoulder bones, you know, fractured shoulders and fractured shoulders, I guess.
Who's this?
Oh, my goodness. It's the dream team. Chiro. Imagine having Chiro and Tanman in the same podcast.
Hello, everyone, first of all, and I just was wondering a question I wrote on Twitter already. Yeah. Maybe you didn't see, because certainly you are involved in this marvelous podcast. My question was on Twitter, is there a life without this podcast?
Is there a life without this podcast?
Simply, I can't imagine. For me.
Why?
Our listeners, I hope.
When you're not on it, Chiro, do you struggle to... Did you come and find us just now? Did you actually deliberately come and find us?
Yeah, because I was looking forward to you.
He's been looking for us ever since Kittel came over.
We never thought...
And for me, it will be very difficult at the end of the tour to survive
We'll start another podcast. Maybe we will continue with the podcast and bring you in on a regular basis.
I hope so.
Fly you to London. We can record it in Hyde Park as we did our...
The only thing better than Chiro's voice is his hand gestures. Unfortunately, they don't really translate.
You can hear
them.
You can hear his hands slapping against his thighs as he talks. Okay. Chiro, thoughts on today's stage? What did you think? Is it a new dawn? Kittel? Kittel's the man?
I read that Cavendish said that Kittel is the next big thing.
Yep.
And so I agree with him. It would be now for Cav... harder to win bunch sprints in the Giro.
In the Tour. We're in the Tour now, not the Giro.
The Giro of France.
Excellent. Thank you, Chiro. Well, listen, we were about to introduce
Chiro,
an interview.
Very helpfully, he's got the Tour route map on the back of his T-shirt.
The route map, really.
Unfortunately, it's last year's Tour route map.
I was thinking, just in case he loses his road book.
If someone finds him in a ditch, they know what town to take him to. We were... trying there before Chiro wandered into the scene. We were trying to introduce an interview that you did today with Lionel with Rod Ellingworth, who is the race coach at Team Sky. He's been involved since the start, was Cavendish's coach. Saw him locked in conversation tonight with Cavendish's agent, Simon Bailiff.
Right.
And when I sort of got near them, they both scuttled off and continued their very...
You generally have that effect on people.
I do, quite often, yes. But yeah, they were having a very animated discussion, so I don't know what that was about, because Rod Ellingworth obviously doesn't coach Cavendish anymore.
Unlikely that it will be about a transfer back to Sky, though, I would have thought.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, yeah, Rod. Rod was very interesting this morning, as we'll hear. Talked to him a little bit about how Sky's tour has gone so far and what the tactics will be as they seek to defend the yellow jersey. And Pete Kennock's, let's face it, fairly sensational tour debut. And then a little bit about Rod at the end.
Well, I'm with Rod Ellingworth of Team Sky at the start in Fougères the morning after the time trial. Chris Froome rode really well yesterday and has opened a gap of 3 minutes 25 on Alejandro Valverde. It looks like a commanding position, but tactically, what does this leave you with now in the race? Because you've got the onus to control in the mountains, but on the flatter stages leading up to Mont Ventoux, what's your role in the race going to be, do you think?
For Chris, it's just staying out of trouble, isn't it? You know, and just giving him every opportunity going into Ventoux to be able to possibly gain more time if he can. You know, I mean, he doesn't have to, does he? But I think we've got a little bit of a cushion now. So if we do have any incidents in the next sort of 3 or 4 days, I think we've got a bit of time to play with. So tactically looking ahead, you've got the mountain stages and the next time trial, which I think is obviously a harder time trial than what we've just done. So potentially Froome will do well there as well, you know, and take more time. So like today, I reckon we're going across France in a different direction to what we'd normally race across France. We don't very often race diagonally across, so you know it can throw up a few different scenarios. I think it's quite covered, so it shouldn't be too windy, but we do know it's going to be crosswinds at times. So these are nervous days. I don't think you can never really relax. You know, we've sat watching on the bus at the end, and every time Froome takes his hands off the handlebars to get through, you're like, oh no, put your hands back on your bars, you know. So it's just every day is just nervous days, really, you know.
What's the feeling in the camp when you've got the yellow jersey and you've got such a firm grip on it, but yeah, it must be the difficulty is not letting complacency come in and think that the job is done.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a lot of people have sort of said, oh, you know, you won it last year, it must be quite easy. Well, it's a completely different team, really. There's only Costa and Edvold, you know, Froome, Richie, I suppose half of them were here last year, but it feels a completely different team without Brad. You know, it's another person in the yellow jersey who has his own different ways of racing, and I think to what Brad has, you know, so it feels like a completely different race and just as nerve-wracking. And that I think the lads, you know, you've got people like Pete and Ian, it's their first tour, you know, so they're nervous about it every day. I think they're not taking it lightly, that's for sure. And as a team, you know, Dave B's certainly not slacking in any shape or form on what we need to do every day. You know, he's on us 24/7.
Yeah, you know,
as ever.
Yeah, you've known Pete Kennock for many years, since he was an under-23, probably before that, because you would have been aware of him as a kid who came over from the Isle of Man, kind of almost in the footsteps of Mark Cavendish.
Yeah, sure.
How has his performance in this tour struck you? Because he seems like a rider who's... It doesn't seem like a rider who's making his debut in the race, that's
no.
for sure.
I'm not surprised at all. I mean, not saying I knew exactly what Pete was going to do, but I'm really not surprised, because Pete has a great talent. He's always shown that when he's on, you know. I think he's had this last year quite a few injury issues, so that sort of kept him down a little bit. I think his passion to win Olympic gold in London, you know, also sort of kept him away from the limelight a little bit, because I think he's capable of doing this maybe last year at least, you know. So I'm not surprised in any shape or form that he's here and doing what he's doing. The other thing is, what I know about Pete is he rises to the occasion. So the bigger the occasion, the better it is. He doesn't, you know, it doesn't bother him. So, you know, I think he's only going to grow even bigger from here. The thing is, with someone like Pete and their attitudes, and like Cav and the likes, you know, it's now time to just keep your feet on the floor. Mm-hmm. Keep working hard, because that's what's got him where he is. He's worked really, really hard and he's committed to it. And that's what he's got to keep his mind on the game, really.
A lot of people who were in the press conference on the rest day were surprised to hear Pete say that he had actually called you and said, I don't think I should do the Giro, because the Giro was initially on his plan.
Yeah.
A lot of people in professional sports teams are really reluctant to deselect themselves from a big objective like that. So, I mean, to me as an outsider, that strikes me as kind of one of the strengths of Sky, is that the riders are encouraged to be honest about how they're going and not necessarily just stick with a plan if it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's all about honesty and openness, and I think it was something which, within British cycling, and certainly leading up to a Road Worlds like we had in 2011, that was a massive thing that I was trying to promote, was, or that we try and promote in British cycling, is honesty. And, you know, if you're not up for the game, it's about the team winning, it's not about the individual. And if they're not up for it, they've got to say, you know, and nothing worse. You're in a dark place if you say you're good and then you get there and then you're not good, you know. And I think some people just have, a bit like Kiryenka, you know, never really saw that one coming at such a big rate, you know. And he went home, I tell you, so disappointed, you know. So Pete turning around and saying about the Giro, you know, we you can have them conversations with these guys, know them a long time, coach them a long time, you know their characters, and I think open honesty is something that I've always promoted with these guys, yeah.
And can you just explain what your role is on a day-to-day basis on the Tour de France? Because we see you around all the time, but you're not in the lead sports director's car with Nico.
No.
So what does your role entail on a daily basis?
Mainly, really, is to try and support the Nico and the performance of the team, and just, you know, from behind the scenes, really, support it in any shape or form in terms of the media, make sure that's not really impacting on what we're doing. All the daily plans and making sure people are in the right place to do their job. So all the plans leading into and just, you know, making sure coming into the tour all the recons were done properly. Have we seen what we wanted to see? Make sure everybody's got the communication well within the team so everybody's aware of what's happening. and then during the stage, on a normal road stage like today, so I'll be half an hour ahead of the race and feeding information back to the team car. So pretty simple stuff, really. Winds, road conditions, if it goes narrow, or, you know, anything coming into the finish, the roundabouts, which side of the road is best to go on the roundabouts, and just little bits that may just give them, you know, which a lot of teams are doing now anyway, but just little things. And if need be, going ahead, filming little sections and sending it back or whatever.
Is the atmosphere in the team with Chris as a leader very different to how it was last year with Brad as a leader?
No, I think it's about the same, really. They're all focused. I think nobody's really got to the point yet of being like super excited, because we've got a bloody long way to go, haven't we? So I think everybody's doing their job, they're all excited, and I think this time last year was about the same. Nobody's more excited. I think actually as it goes on you get more nervous, because it's like, oh God, here we go, we're getting closer, and we've just got to hang on and get closer. So yeah,
from the outside again, just observing Chris and comparing to Brad last year, he does seem to be coping with the yellow jersey a little bit better than Brad did last year. Do you think that's a fair comment, or do you think...
No, not really. I think Brad last year, I think, coped with it really, really well, and I think Chris pretty much the same. You know, a lot of the things, it's like the media things afterwards, isn't it? You know, the coping with all that and the extra time that they've got to gear, the dope control every day. There's, you know, I think a bit of the strategy was the same in terms of them winning the races before they come here. So they get used to winning, they're in the yellow jersey. I think we pretty much tried to do the same thing with Chris to what we did with Brad, you know.
And lastly, just on you, you raced at a good level for a number of years as an amateur in France, but didn't quite crack into the professional scene. So on a personal level, when you're in and around this environment, seeing young lads like Pete Kennett go through it, do you get a little pang of thinking you'd wished you'd have experienced it?
No, not really. I mean, you know, as a kid, I mean, I grew up with cycling, so I'll never say I never dreamt of riding the Tour de France or whatever. Of course I did, and that's why I hope people see the passion that I have for the sport, because that's what it was all about. But I don't regret anything, and I certainly been part of British cycling and helping all this happen, you know, for me has just been, that's perhaps more than anything I could have ever expected, to be honest. So personally, no, super happy. Of course, as a kid I'd love to have ridden the Tour, but you know, that's life. And the thing was, I look back and I think I gave it everything I'd got. I obviously just wasn't good enough, and that's it, you know, and I don't, that's fine, yeah. I'm happy with that.
And the very, very last one, do you think today is a day for Cavendish?
I hope so, yeah, I really do, yeah, for him, you know. Of course it is a day for Cav. You know, obviously he's against, the competition is getting stronger for him, which is a good thing, because, you know, for Mark he needs to keep focusing and keep his mind on the game. And it's not that he's not focused, and it's not that he's not fit enough or everything else. Other people are, you know, there's some other world-class sprinters around. Perhaps there wasn't a few years back. I think his team, you know, there's still a lot of getting together there for them guys, and I'm sure they'll get better over the years, you know. but I hope, personally, I hope he wins. Yeah, of course I do, yeah.
People assume putting a sprint train together is like putting Lego or Meccano together or something, and it just isn't,
No, it's not at all, no. And you know, again, you look at their team, it's not for not trying, is it? You know, they're trying every single day to get it right, and, you know, Mark is trying every single day. So I think he was unlucky the other day. You know, but yeah, I hope he wins, yeah. There's no reason why he can't.
This is a humansinvent.com Tour de France podcast with Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb and Lionel Burney.
I think in this final part we've got a couple of things to talk about. Daniel, you had a conversation at the start this morning with Thibaut Pinot's brother and coach, Julien.
Yeah, and they've been in a terrible mess. I mean, we've touched on this. We've been talking about Thibaut Pinot, or mostly I've been talking about Thibaut Pinot, and and we had
how old is he?
Can we please get back on message?
No, I'm genuinely interested to know how old he is.
I think he's about 23, Tamara.
Is he 23? Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, he's 23. Anyway, he's been having a lot of problems on descents. We've discussed this already. And it seems that those problems have been exacerbated over the last few days by social media. He's been reading.
Is he listening to our podcast?
Well, he might be. He might be after tonight.
Wow.
He's been reading forums, I think, mainly obsessively. Now, we talked earlier about Mark Cavendish. This is something he used to do.
Oh, the exact great quote from Cavendish. What was it?
Yeah, forum people.
Internet forum people.
Yeah, it was forum people, but with his accent, it sounded like foreign people.
And this was a day after he talked about the effing Frenches.
Yeah, so that was the Mark, Mark Cavendish, the racist, to get that spark.
So, Julien Pinot is Thibaut's coach, and he said that Thibaut has been reading these things obsessively, getting very down about it, and apparently he's been getting a lot of flack in the peloton. All sorts of people making fun of him. Apparently it was terrible at the Tour of the Basque Country earlier this year. You know, people, riders literally going past him and pointing at him and sniggering and calling him names, and, you know, real school playground stuff. But this has been an ongoing problem for him for a few years, the descending issues that he's shown in this tour, and they're looking for solutions now, and they will experiment with some things after Tour de France. Apparently they've suggested all sorts of help before, psychological help, technical help, and Pinot has always rejected it,
giving him fake Wi-Fi passwords and stuff like that as well,
that kind of thing.
Just the social media thing.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is a big problem, I think, for
is
a lot of riders.
Is he on Twitter?
Yes,
he is.
I just think it's an interesting side issue. I was discussing it the other day with some colleagues, and I think that some of the vitriol on Twitter, I mean, we've all been exposed to it when you write a column or a story or whatever. Especially me. I mean, I just block them because I don't really want to have a conversation with someone I don't know. I'm prepared to have a conversation with someone I do know, but I think a lot of that vitriol can be quite hurtful, and especially to athletes. They are larger than life. They are warriors of the road, but they're also human beings, and I think a lot of that anger that the fans feel, they don't think before they write or they tweet, and some of it, as it builds up, it can accumulate to an extent where it does mess with your mind. And
we saw it with Bradley Wiggins last year. You know, I think he was very sensitive to that, and he signed off Twitter before the tour. I think the team were very happy about that, but the anger that had built up over many months of seeing what was being written about him on Twitter did come out in that famous press conference last year as well. And it is a big problem, and it's one I've spoken to Steve Peters about, psychiatrist, and it is a big problem. They are, especially at the tour, he said, on a race like this, riders are even more vulnerable to that sort of criticism.
The negativity is augmented because for athletes as opposed to ourselves, because they've got, I don't know, we've got 5, 10,000, 20,000 followers, and they've got over 100,000. So
you're a thick-skinned Tam man.
I can handle it. Yeah.
He's crying now.
No, I just feel for athletes who are exposed to it. I mean, see the stream. Yeah. If you just look at a stream from Cavendish after the other day, I mean, I don't think he needs that. I'm talking about a Twitter stream, not the
urine
stream. But the thing is, I think it's not only, it's very disrespectful, it's unfortunate, and then it also casts a slight on the the fan, the cycling fans who we expect to be educated, especially at the Tour de France.
Yeah. I mean, just... I'm sorry, Lionel, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, I think the easiest thing for people to say is to say, well, ignore it, or don't pay attention, or don't let it get to you. And I think that's... For these athletes, you know, they're coping with so much in terms of just the physical demands, which in turn erode away at the kind of mental strength and well-being when they're tired and going through the routine of the Tour de France every day. It's, first of all, to block it out, the only way really to do that would be to just not be on on Twitter or a social media site. So if they are on it, how, you know, what sort of coping strategies do they have in place? Who's advising them on, you know, what to do? And I think a lot of the sort of older school team managers will probably take that view of, oh, ignore it, don't let it get to you, which really is worse than useless.
They're all on it, though. And, yeah. And you know, even people who you don't think are on it are on it.
Yeah.
So what do you reckon, Lionel? Just get off it before the Tour, or get off it
I think, in total? For something like the Tour, I mean, it's something back in the UK with football clubs having Twitter policies and saying, you know, they don't want their players on Twitter. Simply because of the abuse they attract from fans of other clubs or from their own club, or, you know, stories that get out of hand, or just constantly issuing denials to stuff maybe that's in the press. And I think when you're on the Tour de France, what's it actually adding? Is it helping them at all to be in an environment where pretty much anyone can hit you with rotten tomatoes at any point if that's what they feel like, if that's how they want to engage? And then it's up to the rider, each individual, then they have to feel that, cope with it, process it, and I don't think that's helpful in an environment as stressful as a Tour.
I agree. I mean, Team Sky constantly bang on about marginal gains. I think every single piece of filth that's directed towards an athlete and that they read on Twitter is a marginal loss.
Mm. I mean, just going back to Pino, yeah. I mean, it really is purely psychological. Like, his brother says that, you know, they do cyclocross in the winter, and he's fantastic. His bike handling is fantastic. They mess around on mountain bikes, same thing. So there's absolutely no technical issue. But now, I think they're convinced that a solution will certainly not be found in the next 10 days. And really, he just has to get through the next 10 days as best as he can. And it's such a shame because his condition is good. But they're now talking in terms of riding in such a way that he's not confronted with this problem, so in the Alps he will look to go in breaks, not because it's advantageous, but purely so he doesn't have to deal with riding in a big peloton.
Can they not cut out the descents? Von
2, of course, there are no descents on Von 2.
And they're really, you know, they're talking that stage up because that is one opportunity he'll have. He'll have a day where he doesn't have to think about it in the mountains.
Just back onto the social media or forums and stuff, has that really got to Pino then, the criticism that he's had?
Yeah, absolutely. He was told not to look at... I think it's forums mainly, but it might also be social media. It might also be Twitter. But that, a combination of that and the pressure that he's under in France... I mean, you know, I talked earlier in the Tour, mentioned a couple of newspapers are running sort of... graphics every day comparing him to Roland. They're calling it the crunch match, the grudge match, etc., etc. And there's a huge amount of pressure. I mean, Julien Pinot said if Thibaut had answered the phone to every journalist over the last 6 months, he would have had 2 hours for himself every day. The rest of the time he'd have been on the phone to journalists. So I think he's under intense pressure. There's such an appetite for a French Tour de France winner.
Mm.
Just to go back on the Twitter thing, because it's not all negative. There's an awful lot of... there is a lot of gain, I suppose, from it. Fans can get close to the athletes and tweet messages of support as well. But I think there's something about the psyche of, you know, each critical message hits home perhaps a little bit more than the positive messages. And I think a lot of athletes, when they're on that edge, when they're... you know, they're probably way more aware of their shortcomings and their failings than any of we are or any of the fans.
I think there's a massive disconnect between what fans think athletes are like and what they're actually like. They are, I mean, it's part of the game to appear invulnerable and strong and above all that, but in actual fact, they are quite sensitive, and especially at a race like this, and vulnerable.
Is it time for the...
Yeah, it is time
is
for...
Is it that time of day again?
We're going to do it.
And now, Pedaleur de Charme.
Oh, that was Ciro there. Wonderful to hear from our Italian friend again. And this is our Pedalar de Charme, our daily award. Daniel, any Pedalar de Charme today?
Oh, not really, Rich, to be honest.
Brilliant. Thanks, Daniel. Always a great contribution. Tanman, come on, you must have a Pedalar de Charme today.
Well, I'm looking through the 182 riders here, and what are you talking about? Charm in terms of charisma?
It can be anything. It's a very broad topic.
Or the way that they're charming peddling style.
It can manifest itself in the way they ride, or their manners, politeness, class, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, that's hard. I'll probably have to give it to the stage winner, wouldn't you? I mean, he's got them.
Yeah,
I think he's got the goods. The way he handles himself in the press conferences, I like him.
He's good. Yeah.
I'll give a little nod to Simon Clark of Orica Greenwich, because he spent quite a lot of time this morning chatting to some fans and having his picture taken, that kind of thing. And the fans, I saw the look on their faces; they were absolutely delighted. I'm assuming that they had come from Australia, but I don't know. But I would imagine that if they were Simon Clark fans, they may well have been here on holiday from Australia.
Few and far between, though, Lionel. Most of the fans here at the tour are for me.
I think we'll wrap it up there, chaps. Thank you very much, Tanman, for joining us tonight.
It's been a pleasure.
I think we're going to get you back on, you know that.
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, great. Excellent. We love having you. Daniel, thank you.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks, Rich.
Lionel, thanks.
No, thank you, Richard, for being such a consummate host. See you again tomorrow night.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.